Chapel Hill and Carrboro, North Carolina. Welcome to Wake Up Call, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom radio show. I'm Emily O'Hare, and I'm here with a whole bunch of people. Iris, Dick Paddock is not here today and won't be here for the next 2 weeks. But I'm here with Iris and Chris. And Lori is our host, and she's going to introduce our guest.
Are we okay? Is my sound okay? Okay. All right. We're going to miss Dick. He's off in California visiting the family. And Iris and Chris are here to learn the board also, so that when Dick goes away, we have lots of backup. And I want to introduce our guest,
Julian
Serrano. And I know... Julian, I know from Ed King is one who gets our guests for us, and we should say he's part of our crew too because he's.
Lori, you might want to start again.
Oh, okay.
Okay, just
all right. Okay, we're getting ourselves organized here, and so okay, this is the Wilf Radio Show, the Wake Up Call, and I'm Lori Hoyt, and. We have a guest today that I'm very curious to find out more about his newspaper, Julian Serrano from Chatham County, and I think it's called The County Line.
That is correct.
And Ed King, who is our guest recruiter extraordinaire, knew Julian and thought he'd be really good for our show. And so he just told me about that. You have a terrific alternative newspaper.
Well, Ed has contributed to. He's written a couple articles.
Well, he never told me that.
Well, no, he's very good. He's very good at what he does, and I certainly was thankful to get them. I was really happy for it. But our paper has been around since 1999.
Okay.
And it's comes out 10 times a year. It's a monthly with a combined issue for summer, July, August, and for winter, December, January. And we rely entirely on contributions from the community. I write one thing, and everything else is our submissions from people that are concerned about things, interested in things, have things that they want to share. And I think it's a pretty lively read, or at least I hear that from the when I deliver the paper, and people seem happy to find them.
Yeah, well, Ed spoke very highly about it and said that you publish the kind of articles that don't get in the regular newspaper, and the articles that are what people are. He said the same thing, that what people are interested in and passionate about.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the model works just because Chatham in this area has a really literate, dedicated bunch of citizens who are interested in everything, things that I know nothing about, but they share all that with the community. They share it with the readers in the community.
Yeah.
And so that's worked really well.
So where do you circulate your paper, like in stores or
They're actually about a little, it circulates in a little over 100 places. You can get it in Chapel Hill and Carrboro also,
For it. Whereabouts in Chapel and Carrboro?
Well, in Chapel Hill you can get it. I circulate about nearly 200 copies at Whole Foods and another 100 at the library. And that it also or at various libraries on the UNC campus.
Okay.
And in Carrboro, you can get it at either Weaver Street Market, so I haven't dropped this month's off yet.
Okay.
And you can get them at coffee shops, the coffee shops around town that I can think of.
Yeah.
And, of course, I just saw there's a new one there that I wasn't even aware of right down from this building. But a lot of places like that. So you can see, it's easy to find, and it's online. It's chathamcountyline.com. www.pacificpeacefoundation.org, and we have a whole different, I mean, not only do we have a PDF of our papers, so you can read the whole paper as it appears, but we have a whole bunch of original online copy that of every stuff we can't get in the paper, we get online. And so also, if things are inconvenient because of our publication schedule, everything can go online, so people can read it all there.
Well, I knew I had seen it somewhere, but I didn't know where. And I'll look particularly for it now that we're learning more about it.
Yeah. I should also say it's available in the county library closest to Chatham in all the surrounding counties. So you can find it in Durham and in Harnett and in Alamance and in Randolph and in Lee and in Moore.
Oh, boy.
And of course, in Orange, but at the library in the library's here.
Well, I can see where you're probably going to get quite a few articles because so much is happening in Chatham.
Well, that's the thing. It's always Chatham is just a fascinating place.
It is.
Oh, sorry. Chatham is always a fascinating place because of how, because it's constantly changing.
Uh-huh.
And it has a really active, involved citizenry.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Chatham has the highest rate of voters of any county in North Carolina. More people vote in Chatham, and it's an absolute borderline, you know, red blue county.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's Republican and sometimes it's Democrat. It almost sort of switches every 4 years, it seems, in terms of the Board of Commissioners, how that goes.
Yeah, and it's sort of like I get fed up, throw the bumps out, get some new ones in.
Yeah, they get to throw the bumps out every 4 years. No, they're great. They're great folks, don't mean to say that. I think.
Yeah, me either.
But, you know, by way of that. But,
yeah.
But something else I wanted to talk about, if I could.
Sure.
This is your time. Okay, well, I have published my first book.
Oh!
And I have a copy of it here. I did not write it, but I published it. My father wrote it. And he was a scholar. And he was actually a really distinguished scholar who died 50 years ago this year. And I was 15 at the time. And I knew he was working on a manuscript, but it so happened that what he wrote was a mess and it was illegible. And
I'm going to hold on to it for a minute, and I'll pass it around. A beautiful cover with a spiral.
Hart Palmer gets credit for that. And I'm going to say I have to mention Hart because she lays this paper out, and she does all the ads in it, and she's just an amazingly talented graphic
designer. And what's her name, Hart?
Hart Palmer.
Okay.
And she's just a terrific designer. She does this, and she did that. We did that book the same way we did the paper. I got everything together. She did the layout, the format. She arranged the pictures.
Well, let me get the name of it out for our listeners and for the people sitting here before I pass it on to them. It's called Take Care of the Night. It's got a very dramatic cover with this huge spiral. It looks like it could be a tornado or it could be something really positive. And the secondary title is A Study of Religion, Dream, and Magic. And it's by Renzo Serrano. And then underneath here says, Anxiety equals an examination by a classically trained scholar of the mid-20th century. Oh, boy. I'm going to pass.
That was my dad, but it's about anxiety.
Oh, there's a picture of him on the back.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's actually, I took that picture when I was 14, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
But
in Turin.
We lived in Italy when I was younger. So it's
March 1964. Very, very stern looking. Very
he's a
elegant
serious
looking
picture.
Man.
But yeah, no, he sure was. He was a very stylish dresser and was, very debonair and all those kinds of things.
And are you an only child?
No, I have an older sister.
So you're the only boy.
But I'm the only boy, yes.
Yeah.
And
so you were living in Italy till after your father died?
Well, no, he had a Fulbright fellowship to study there. So we moved over when he studied there. And then it lasted 2 years, and then we moved back after it was over.
And, wow. And so, how exciting as a teenager to be living in another country. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. But what happened is I ended up, I was 12 when I moved there and 14 when I moved home. And I kind of came of age there in a weird kind of way. And So I have sort of similar sensibilities about that. But
that
book, it's a very serious scholarly work. It is not, it's about anxiety, but it is not a self-help book at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it is really not at all. It's
sort of the anxiety of the age with all the things that are happening.
He wrote it because he mentions in it that he was plagued by anxiety himself, but he treats it in a scholarly way and mm-hmm. through a number of perspectives. And mm-hmm. one of the things that had fascinated him was magic. And so he studied magic in the West Indies in the late 1940s and 1950s and into the early 60s. And so there are three sections of the book. One is religion, which is it was scholarly. The other part is dream, which really has to do with science and social science and psychoanalysis,
uh-huh.
as particularly was practiced, when he was alive. And then the last part, magic, is about his research mostly in Antigua, but also in some of the other islands, in Puerto Rico and Haiti, and I think, Martinique and St. Kitts and some others, that where he had different experiences investigating magical practices.
Well, so your father's, with the Fulbright Scholarship, what was his field of theory?
He was a political scientist.
Political scientist. Yeah,
he taught at the School for Advanced International Studies of Johns Hopkins University, was his regular position. And he sort of trained diplomats is what he did. He had some sort of senior government people. They're all called participants.
So he was a real Renaissance man.
Oh, he was an amazingly smart guy, is what I'm going to say. He read everything in every language, and of course English and Italian and French and Spanish and Greek and Latin, and he remembered it all. And so he was something. He was really just a phenomenally.
And so he died prematurely?
Yeah, he was 56 when he died. And so that was, and so he was, but I mean, you can see he wasn't a young man in those pictures.
No, no.
He had many of the, many worries on his shoulders, I guess. I mean, he was plagued by anxiety, and that will do it to you.
Being an anxious person at times myself,
Well, that's what he says, is everybody has it.
Yeah.
And everybody deals with it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And people deal with it, and there are a lot of people use non-rational ways, which work very well, for some people, and not for others.
Yeah. Self-medicating in ways.
Well, everything of that sort, that's in fact, and that's he includes in under science everything from psychoanalysis to sleeping pills, will, because they're all scientific invention, mm-hmm. and so.
You mentioned religion in mm-hmm. one of the chapters. How did he use religion to deal with his anxiety?
He didn't, because he was an agnostic.
Okay.
But he talks about the practice of it, and that's sort of what it's around for. And in other words, to deal with anxiety.
So he talked about those are one of the resources, but not so much for him.
Right. It's because he, I don't know.
If there's any passages you want to read, feel free. But I just wanted to ask you about yourself. So you're 15 years old. You're just back for about a year from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of a crucial age, and your father dies unexpectedly, or had he been?
He was sick, so it wasn't completely it was always a horrible shock.
Yeah.
But he had had a stroke, and so he was ever since his stroke, he wasn't the same. And so it was after that he died.
Because obviously you think a lot of him, and he was a big influence in your life.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He was terrific, and I miss him. I'm going to say
what a loss.
Yeah, I miss him. I mean, you miss your parents. My mother happily lived to be 90, and has been gone now for 14 years, and mm-hmm. I sure miss her too. Those people are with you forever.
And the thing they're part of you.
The best about this book is that after he's been gone for so long, I mean, I had to channel him to write it because his manuscript was such a mess that I had to try to get inside his head and remember what it was. And, you know, for all I know, he's going, "No, you idiot, not that. But, you know, but I actually think he'd be really pretty happy about the whole thing when all is said and done. I think he'd be real tickled, you know, that his book, you know, 50 years after he died, is finally getting published.
So you had this manuscript for a long time, kind of a messy manuscript that was kind of a treasure because it was something left from your father.
I have it for a long time. I got it in about 2000.
Oh.
Because my mother had given it to his best friend, who was also a professor.
Okay.
And he tried to get it published by having it retyped. But even that wouldn't do it. There was a neat manuscript with gaps where so that was what I actually started with because I could sort of at least read some of it and then sort of go back and forth. But no, I got it in 2001, I believe.
Okay.
And then I looked at it and I tossed it in the closet and left it there for 5 years maybe.
Uh-huh.
And then finally I took it one summer and said, "I'm really going to fight my way through this." And, you know, after I got through some of the gaps and it started to move and it was pretty lively. And
So
I liked it more and more as I went. And then I thought, some point, I should do something with this. And I've been a newspaper editor for a long time, and so I don't have the talents of a scholar, but I do know what people read and what they don't read, and I tried to use those particular talents with it. And I ended up retyping the entire thing into a computer one keystroke at a time. Every time I came to a gap, I would try to figure out my way around it. Sometimes I had to toss, you know, three or four paragraphs because it wasn't, and then I had to make some sort of a bridge between the missing things. And so it was quite a challenge, and it's certainly not what my, you know, it's also different. He also had three books with no breaks. And it's extremely intense reading is all I can say. I broke it into 43 chapters and an introduction. So there are plenty of opportunities. Nobody can get overwhelmed by it. And nothing's longer than 2,500 words. That's even a short magazine article. And so you can read it and put it down. And I hope it's written so you can almost pick it up anywhere and read it.
Well, good for you. What a labor of love. And also, I'm sure you got fascinated at reading his ideas intensely
that. Yeah, it was like it's reconnecting with him. And that was him. I mean, he was just a brilliant guy. Yeah. And this is him at his best. And so that's it's really cool. I've been very, very happy. It came out on right around Father's Day. In other words, the first is, you know, the publication date, I should say, is August 9th, which would have been his 106th birthday. But I uploaded the file to Amazon.com, or my designer did, and they said they accepted it right before Father's Day. And then on the Monday after Father's Day, I actually had a real, honest-to-God book in my hands. And it's just, I mean, I was just absolutely, I've been kind of on top of the world ever since about it all. And
so who published it?
It's Amazon. I'm sort of self-published through Amazon.com.
Yeah, okay.
And they do a terrific job, and they're very, it's CreateSpace, actually. And it was designed by, of course, Hart Palmer, my designer, and now it is left upon me to market it. And this is a whole different phase. A whole different phase.
Because even if it comes out by a major publisher, you know, I have a friend who's a writer, and you still have to go and market. They set up the dates for you all around at bookstores and around the country and stuff. But, you know, you sure know how to do that.
Well, I'm going to do what I can. And so I actually wrote about it in my own paper this month, and there's a little ad. And after it's published, there'll be a big ad in that paper. and now I'm here. I'm talking about it on the radio.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping there'll be – now I have to get some of the – papers that I don't own to do it, and that'll be.
but
I think I'm optimistic. I think Mark Schultz of the Chapel Hill News expressed an interest. I've always liked him. He's been a friend for a colleague a long time ago, and I used to work. We both worked at the Durham paper. So.
Well, he was on our show just a month or two ago.
Okay,
not very long ago, and we also just had another chat on my Jeff Starkweather.
Oh, sure, and, Jeff, absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And she had this wonderful woman with him, and I'm blocking on her name. If anybody, do you remember her name?
Jeff had
a woman who works with him.
Oh, Dee Reed, not his wife.
No, his wife.
Amanda. Oh, Amanda, yeah, sure. Amanda Robertson.
Yes. Yes.
Sure. Yes. I have not met her, but they co-author
wonderful.
A bunch of articles together. So that's
So we're trying to keep up with Chatham, too.
Yeah.
Because there's some wonderful people. I know Barbara Lotus, who worked with the Democratic Party. And some years back, the plywood place in Moncure was on strike.
Uh-huh.
And Wilf, our Women's International League, we got very involved with that, and we went out every week and stood on the line with them and brought sandwiches started getting things organized, helping them organize to go to the village council or Board of Aldermen or whatever. I can't remember what it was called. But anyhow, we started going to Chatham so much, I said, I know people in Chatham better than I do here. So, dear to my heart.
Yeah,
it's a great place. Under threat right now, of course, with all the development, but...
Yeah, well, that's, I suspect that's going to happen. And and I also think in the universe of things, it's a lot worse things could happen than that. And in other words, there's going to be change and there's going to be growth. And I think I have faith that these folks are going to do a good job and be respectful of the environment and make a pleasant environment. But the coal ash is something else entirely.
But, that's the other thing.
Okay, well, no, I don't know. Nowadays, the county doesn't have any say in it whatsoever. It's entirely the state of North Carolina, and of course, the Republicans are going to be fine with it. Now, I noticed that Lee County agreed almost immediately and got $12 million, and the Chatham commissioners all denounced it, ended up getting $19 million. And so, it's most of the time it seems to me that Democrats take money, Republicans take money. The Republicans generally get more money for the same thing than the Democrats. This time, Democrats managed to get more money than the Republicans. But that's so.
I know, it's a shame.
There's nothing that any of the Chatham commissioners or any of those folks could do about it.
Yeah.
And ditto fracking. Nobody there likes wants fracking, but it's all at the state level, and counties are powerless to stop any of it.
I guess our only chance is to try to throw those bums out at the state level.
Well, there you go.
Because some of that could maybe be reversed if we got better people in.
Well, yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of what they did is illegal to begin with, and is being challenged in court for.
Yeah.
I mean, the composition of the board that made the decisions, that the legislator appointed it rather than the governor. And I mean, there's just all sorts of rules that they didn't follow and that may undermine much of what they do. And so there's, look at the constitutional amendment that they've pushed through to ban same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's been thrown out. So, I mean, they can do whatever they want, but they got Trump by the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's the federal courts of the U.S. Supreme Court.
I would imagine that you had some of your people writing in articles on all of those topics, the coal ash and the
I had quite a bit of coal ash coverage, I'm sure.
And fracking.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you know Judy Hogan?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Judy wrote.
We've had Judy on the show.
Oh, good. Yeah, she's
here. Oh, God, I want to have her back.
Well, she's been writing a lot about the coal ash.
Yeah.
Because she's been really, she and the Blue Ridge Environmental League and a bunch of other folks, they've been contributing a bunch of articles about those.
Yeah.
About that topic. They sure have.
So are you the only newspaper in Chatham County, or are you?
Oh no. We're the alternative paper in
You're
Chatham.
You're the alternative?
But no, the Chatham News and the Chatham Record have been around since the, you know, the late 1800s.
Okay.
And they, but I mean, they do, we focus on issues, and they do high school sports, and they do cops, and they do fires, and they do car wrecks, and I don't do any of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't cover them, that is.
So
I try to avoid them in any case, except for, you know, high school sports are fine.
So, so I guess I guess yours is the only Chatham paper. I guess I have seen it at Weaver Street and have picked it up periodically because I was I don't remember. That's why I said, "Geez, is there another paper?"
Well, yeah, they Well, this also we're in Chatham, but we're also we really try to. Anybody who's interested in Chatham, too.
Yeah, what's
so
happening there?
So yeah, because it's, so many people are. Have relationships, and, and so that's why I'm trying to spread beyond and trying to use the internet to do that also. Though that's a pretty new experiment, so we'll see how that all goes.
But, so, how long have you been doing this paper there?
Golly, I have been doing that paper since 2001, and I've owned it since 2002.
So you've been doing it about 14 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what did you do before that? Were you doing newspaper somewhere else?
Well, I had actually – I was an editor at the Durham Sun.
Oh, you meant – yeah.
And then the Durham Herald Sun for 12 years. And during my time there, I my title the whole time was neighborhood editor. But I went – for the first 6 years, I went up the corporate ladder. And the next 6 years, I went down the corporate ladder. And yeah, I ended up I got burned out and became a public relations consultant, and that was sort of boom times, and that was I liked it okay, and then I wanted to actually get some more. During the .com bust, I wanted to get some more work, and I applied for a job as an editor of a community newspaper called Chatham Crossroads. And so they hired me, and it was really, really interesting and unusual. My first paycheck bounced.
That was a little discouraging.
No, it was a bank error, and there was actually, it was just some, but anyway, but I was given an email list and said, email these people and they'll send you stories. And I said, this isn't going to happen. It's, I didn't know what I was getting into, but it was. But I did. I said all these people I'd never heard of. I asked for stories, and they wrote me some stories. And it was fun. And it was the most fun I had in ages. And they, of course, went broke after. I mean, they had got a big – they had become a not-for-profit because they had gotten a big grant from Z. Smith Reynolds in the early years with which they paid me. And then as soon as the grant was gone, that was it. And they were about to fold up shop. And I had so much fun. I asked them if they would mind if I would take it over. And they said, be my guest, but you have to change the name because of the bylaws of the 501(c).
Mm-hmm.
And so it became Chatham County Line. And so it's been Chatham County Line since December 2002.
So, how have you managed to stay afloat in this time of shrinking newspaper readership? And
by radically changing the design of the paper, and I don't have an office. I have a computer in the family room where I sit and do my work with in the company of
so you don't
the
have
dog
to...
and cat, and my daughter when she's home from school. But that's and so I don't. So I work at home, and I don't have.
You don't have to pay rent anywhere.
Right. I don't have to pay rent anywhere. I have. Oh, I have my designer. I work with her very closely, we go years without seeing each other. It's all by phone and email. but it's interesting,
it's
a very small operation.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had cut. I'm going to say I cut it back drastically when newspapers started going out of business in 2008.
Yeah.
I'd been 20 pages regularly, and I direct mailed all over the place, and 8,500. Print run is now 4,000, and I get about 1,000 unique hits.
Well, how do you make any money even being streamlined? How do you support it?
By the ads you see in there.
Oh, the ads.
So it's all advertised. It's all supported by advertising.
Okay.
And so here you can see, and there are a lot of ads in there. And the communities have supported us very well with articles, but they've also supported us by advertising.
Okay.
Does it come out once?
Oh, once a month. Yeah. Well, once a month of the combined summer issue and a combined winter issue.
Oh, okay.
So 10 times a year.
Yeah.
So that, yeah. Oh, it is a nice design with the pictures and everything. So advertising, and you're able to get enough to survive.
Yeah, exactly.
Good
sure
for
am.
You.
Also have a very understanding wife and who works as a nurse and keeps us in
okay,
health insurance
so
and everything and more regular paycheck, if you will, than because this tends to be boom and bust.
Yeah, it's just when you work for yourself, that's a lot of times what it is. We take a break in the middle, Julian, and so you can catch your breath and think about anything you left out that you want to get to. And we're going to just do a few announcements.
Sure.
Okay, Emily, it's yours.
This is Wilf, Wake Up Call, station WCOMLP 103.5 FM. And we are underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore, which is located in Carrboro on Lloyd Street. And also you could stream us live on WCOMFM.org. Any announcements?
Yeah, I think, and I forgot to bring it, but
we're good with that.
We're
yeah.
promoting,
yes.
Maybe you want to...
Yeah. Well, the voting rights, the march on July 13th, that's a Monday.
Next Monday.
In Winston-Salem. And I just know that the NAACP is working really hard in organizing for this and, calling in all their coalitions and trying to get the numbers out. I know there's a bus leaving from... United Church of Chapel Hill
mm-hmm.
on Martin Luther King, and as of yesterday, there were a few seats left.
Okay, I think it's leaving around 2 in the afternoon because Winston-Salem's a good 2-hour drive away, and some people are going to be going down the day before. There's going to be a press conference at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then from 10 to 4, there's going to be teach-ins. But many of us, with the bus, the main thing for many of us is going to be a rally and a march that starts at 5 o'clock. And so the bus will get you there in plenty of time, and the bus will leave right after the rally and march to get people back at a relatively okay time. The Raging Grannies, I think, are planning to sing at least a song or two. And because Iris and Chris, who are here working with us as helping be our crew, and I are Raging Grannies, and we're looking forward to it very much. And
I'm just reminded that the bus is for adults $15, for students
$10. That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there is scholarships, I think.
That's right. Scholarships are available.
Especially for young people. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I was at the meeting yesterday, and 2 people donated money for scholarships. So there is money.
And for young people, I'm not sure what where the cutoff is, but it's $10. And then there will be some scholarships. And this is about voting rights. This is the North Carolina NAACP is suing. It's a court case, and Monday the 13th is the opening court day, suing McCrory as representative and governor of this state for going against the Constitution with their voting rights suppression laws that they've put in place, along with some other southern states, is the aftermath of the Supreme Court ending the voting rights bill that had southern states had to get approval for their rules on voting until this past year or two. And because the Supreme Court says we're in a post-racial era, since we had a black president, there wasn't any need. And of course, that all hell has broken loose since they've done that in terms of a lot of voting laws suppressing voting rights. And in this state, it's not just the voter ID, which you hear the most about. They've also cut back on early voting. They've ended Sunday voting. They've ended where 17s could automatically then get registered to vote
same
for when
day
they're
registration.
And same day ended that. So it's got many, many nasty little facets to it. And it's so important and so critical that the NAACP is saying this is our Selma. Many of you have seen the movie Selma, where people went and fought and were beaten up and some killed for voting rights back then. Well, we still have a struggle. It's an ongoing struggle. So on the 13th, try to come to Winston-Salem. Pay attention if you can't come. Support the NAACP. This is the North Carolina State NAACP. And I think that's it. I just want to mention that I'm Lori Hoyt. This is Emily O'Hare on the board. Chris and Iris are here helping us out and learning the board, so we have a lot of backup. Dick Paddock is in California visiting family right now. And our guest, which I've been given feedback, we don't mention our guest's name often enough. So remind me, somebody, it's Julian Serrano from Chatham County, our neighboring county. And he is here. He's the editor of the Chatham County Line, and which has been going strong for 14 years. And he's here promoting his book, which is so wonderful. From his father's manuscript. You want
it? Yeah, thank you. I was going to read a little bit of
that.
If
would
I
be wonderful.
Had the chance. This yes. is in from the third section of the a book, which is Magic, and it's chapter 3, and the chapter title is All Human Behavior is Filled with Non-Rational Elements. And he writes, I became interested in magic practices before World War II under rather curious or interesting circumstances. In the wee hours of the morning, I entered a private club in Chicago in the company of a famous psychoanalyst, since deceased, and a divorcee, since remarried. At our table, we were offered a well-engraved card by a tuxedoed man who referred to himself in print as a character analyst. My psychoanalyst friend jumped at the occasion for a lecture or a treatment, and this man was called to give his ministration. I observed a number of elements that should not have escaped anybody, not just a social scientist, my profession, but any observant person. The analyst guessed that my male companion was a doctor, and my friend was as impressed as if he had not been addressed as doctor by everybody in the club, from the doorman to the mercenary who'd called the analyst to come and speak to him. The analyst missed when he falsely guessed that the doctor was not a psychoanalyst, but a surgeon. My friend had small, well-manicured hands, of which he was immoderately proud. He considered the false guess of the analyst a true guess because there was no real difference between a psychoanalyst and a surgeon. That in quotes. And then in De Mortuis Nil Nisi Bonum. It's don't speak ill of the dead. But he says, such doubtful truth, had it been stated during therapy, would have been not merely fallacious, but very expensive. The woman at our table was, with the usual display of wisdom and gravity, curtly disposed of when the analyst stated that she was full to the brim with creative ability, the creative ability her parents had thwarted, stunted, and destroyed. She almost fell into tears of gratitude because nobody, she declared, had seen her problem so simply, directly, and quickly. Then the analyst came to me and told me a series of cheap, flattering untruths. The fact that he spoke fast did not dim their sordidness, with untruth and cheap flattery mixed in at least up to the $2 his analysis cost. What interested me in magic then was the interest of my companions. The psychoanalyst was obviously flattered by the compliment to his hands, and I do not blame him, for I am sure not often had he had them complimented for so low a fee. What the woman in question had been told was both general and universal. I believe it forms the magna pars of that strange bulky dialogue or double monologue we call courtship. I have said the same things to women who had no trace of creativity and had been blessed by comprehending and loving parents. Nobody ever told me I was wrong.
What a sense of humor. So what a great sense of humor.
He's a lot of fun. I mean, he's a lot. He was
terrific.
He's
Oh, wow.
I love that.
But he kept up in spite of the sordidness of some of what this analyst was saying. That piqued his interest
in
magic.
Yeah, piqued his interest. And so he pursued it everywhere. I mean, he comments on the book, for example, that it's practiced widely in Zurich. And that that astrologers are hired before Swiss firms do big financial deals.
Wow. Well, in the West Indies, you know, the African-American writer Zora Neale Hurston, she got very interested in voodoo and, in fact, studied it intensely and became a voodoo priestess and, you know, went to Haiti, which was where there were a lot of masters in that and also, I guess, in Louisiana. So so a lot of people get very, very interested in it and get – so he – you said the West Indies.
Yeah, he did. Well, he did most of his research in Antigua. And at one point, he served as an apprentice or a helper to a witch doctor.
Yeah.
Or an Obeya woman who, in the name of the faith there is Obeya. It's voodoo in Haiti, but in Obeya in the English West Indies.
Yeah. Interesting. So he really went into it like she did in a very deep way.
Except that he didn't fully believe it. So he was simply observing what she did and what other people believed.
Yeah.
And that was more like it.
The power of their belief.
With
Zora, I read her biography, and she got into it in a very deep way and practiced it for a time, So it's very interesting.
He's been dead for 50 years, and he's alive again now.
Alive again.
I mean, his words are right here.
Yeah, yeah. So that's wonderful. That by doing this book, it's brought him more alive again to you.
Yeah.
Rekindled those memories.
And everything that I do, I come up with thinking some of his thoughts when I'm writing my own stuff. And, it's helpful. I mean, it's really helpful. And a lot of the stuff he talks about in the difference between reason and rationalization and how much everybody confuses it all the time. And I tend to think about that also. You know, am I just making an excuse for something I want to do anyway? Or am I actually, have I come up with some good idea, have I reasoned some solution to some problem? I mean,
so we're talking to Julian Serrano, the editor of the alternative newspaper in Chatham County called the Chatham County Line. And if this is piquing your curiosity, you can pick up copies in coffee shops and in Weaver Street and Whole Foods and many places. And we're talking about this book with his father's words. He put together or reconstituted his father's manuscript. His father was Renzo Serrano, and the book is called Take Care of the Night, A Study of Religion, Dream, and Magic. So he's going to be promoting this book in various places,
I was going to say that the book has its own website, which is takecareofthenight.com, and the newspaper does too, but we're chathamcountyline.org. So both of these can be explored from any kind of convenient device you may have, your smartphone, your tablet, your laptop, your whatever, all those kinds of things. You can sort of check out all of them. The book is going to be available for purchase on August 9th.
Oh,
that's its official release date.
Okay.
Which would have been my father's 106th birthday.
Okay. So when you were saying August 9th, I thought you meant last August.
No.
So we've got the pre-release.
Yes, this is all the pre-release.
Hot off
everything.
The press. Oh, my God. We got an exclusive.
This is the first. Anybody who will have heard of it.
Doubly exciting. Yeah. Oh, it really is. And I have to say, please try to get your hands on the actual book. I'm a hands-on person, not an online person, because it's beautiful. The design is just beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank heart for that.
And yeah, I do thank
you. Yeah, that's... Anyway, I'm really lucky that there's so many smart people that I work with and who help me and who bail me out very regularly. It's available at Amazon.com.
Oh, okay.
And it's available also on the website. You can order it there after the, you know, after it's released at TakeCareOfTheNight.com.
TakeCareOfTheNight.com. It's a dramatic title.
Well, actually, I should say that it's from an old Antiguan proverb, which is take care of the night or the night takes care of you. And he talks throughout the book about the fight against anxiety is taking care of the night, how people try to take care of the night.
So that's I wonder how that fits in with anxiety, like that.
Well, that is the night.
The night of the souls.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that is heavy.
But your father sounds like such a student of human behavior.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With a sense of humor, and I think that would be such a fun read. You have some in your house.
I'm supposed to get five more, but I got five proof copies, and now I got another five proof copies, and then we're going to get this thing absolutely, completely the way we want it. I've found two typos already in the text. So we have to.
Yeah.
It'll be actually published on the 9th and available to everybody then.
Well, we're talking to Julian Serrano and talking about his father's manuscript, which is just going to be coming out August 9th. Renzo Serrano, Take Care of the Night, A Study of Religion, Dream, and Magic. And we're looking forward to it very much. This has been fascinating. I'm Lori Hoyt, and Emily O'Hare is at the board, and we're missing Dick Paddock, but we're doing okay. So how are we doing on time, Emily?
About 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes?
12,
well, if I could read a little bit more.
So you
more,
can
I would
read some
to.
More, yeah.
Sort of from the magic section, but... Back from the religion section,
okay.
He just something that he wrote. I should say at the time he wrote this, Pope John the 23rd had just died. He's since been named a saint. Mm-hmm. And Pope Paul the 6th.
Not the Polish Pope?
No, he was from the 19...
Oh, oops.
He was from... Yeah, no, the Polish Pope was John Paul the 2nd. But anyway, but this is John the 23rd from the early 1960s.
Oh, and John, that was the good Pope.
Yeah, the good Pope. Yeah, he was just made a saint. They elected Paul the 6th.
Oh, this was the one who was... Francis reminds me of him,
yeah,
the new Pope, in that he's got
like
that
him.
Human touch and sort of that popular, you know, really out reaching out to people. Oh, that's that Pope,
but
yeah.
Anyway, I just want to read this. The death of the Pope commands the work of the new Pope, who declares his policy with his papal names. According to that arch anti-clerical Machiavelli in the Florentine Histories, popes assumed a papal name when Osporco was created pope and called himself Sergio, as Osporco would have had a sound too similar to dirty in Italian. Some names have political fortune. Pius VI, Bracci, died in 1797, and the name was so constant that Pius XII died in 1959. Pope John the 23rd ignored the fact that a pope by that same name and numeral is buried in the baptistry of Florence, and by assuming that name and numeral, doomed him.
We're getting the page turned.
Yeah, many centuries later, to being only an anti-pope, not merely a declaration of policy, but a good explosion of wit. Paulus VI assumed a name borne by a number of lackluster popes. Nobody remembers Paul I. Paul II was a Venetian cardinal still remembered for building the palace where Mussolini had his office. Paolo II Farnese it was his name, was twisted into Frenese because it's it's a dirty word in Italian, which I won't translate.
Okay.
Because he promoted his ecclesiastical career with the beauty of his sister, who carefully distributed her sexual favors throughout the Vatican. Paolo the Fourth Carafa was a tough, bearded Neapolitan bully, and Paolo the Fifth Borghese built St. Peter, protected young Bernini, and impoverished the Holy See in order to enrich his family.
So this is a scandalous look at history of the papacy.
These are the popes with the name Paul. There you go. Paolo the Sixth took his name, so he said, from the Apostle Paul, whose travels he reiterated by going to the Holy Land. Travels the first Paul undertook without the help of airlines and the benefit of televisions. Anyway,
so I bet living in Italy there sort of also got him interested in some of that history.
See, he was just fascinated. But he just read everything and remembered it all.
Wow.
And that was the thing. He just remembered all this stuff. And when I did this, I had to Google stuff. I'd never heard of these people. And I mean, I don't know if I'm well educated. My parents certainly spent a lot on it, so I hope I am. But I mean, I had to Google a lot of the people that he had. Not only he read all their works and was talking and assumed that everybody who would read this had also read all their works. And so that's what I had to kind of do is to make it so that even if you hadn't, you wouldn't be excluded. And that's why for some folks, I would recommend. Getting this on one of those Kindles, because then you can Google it as soon as it comes up if you have any questions, and you can get your answers. But yeah, that's
yeah. So especially for us former Catholics, it's particularly interesting. Because I was a child when Pope Pius XII was the Pope.
Okay.
And then he went on forever and forever, it seemed like. Yeah. he didn't have a very good record during the Second World War.
No.
In terms of the Nazis and.
No, sure didn't.
Yeah, we won't go into that scandal, but it sort of took some of the luster away. But who was right after him? Was that Pope John the 20th? Who was the one after?
John the 23rd. He wasn't Pope for real long.
No, he wasn't.
1958 or 59,
I think.
He came in, and he was he was one of those cases where they couldn't agree on somebody, and they thought, well, he'll occupy the office for a couple of years and die, and then we'll
and then
he took over and did all the stuff, and they said, you know, and so.
And so there is some speculation that maybe he was. Helped along to.
I didn't hear that, but that's it would be dreadful. But
it would be dreadful, and I shouldn't really repeat.
Yeah, no,
gossip.
I heard none of this, but
he did do such tremendous changes in the church. I mean, even though they've tried to suppress them, some of those changes, a lot of them still go on today. You know, where the mass is in English and it's comprehensible, and the priest faces the people instead of having his back to you the whole time, and just so much, you know, opening up the windows and letting sunlight and fresh air in is, I think, how Pope John talked about it in those terms. So this is, I can't wait to read all this.
I think you get into it, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I hope you could almost just pick it up anywhere and enjoy it, and rather than, again, it's a serious topic, and
it's
sort of quite serious. And,
But
he's still a lively person, a lot of fun.
Well, we're talking just because I've been given feedback that people listen and they get interested in that, we don't repeat the name often enough, and they say, "Well, I wish you had said it."
I'm Julian Sereno. And,
yes,
and I'm editor and publisher of Chatham County Line, and now I've published my first book.
Yes,
it's called Take Care of the Night.
Take Care of the Night, and it's coming out August 9th, and we're having an exclusive here. We're getting pre-publication notice about it, and really, it looks. beautiful, the cover. It's so interesting. I think who cannot be interested in religion and dreams and magic? Yeah. And that must have been hard, tying those three things together in a way that I can see where they're connected, but still those are discrete topics,
well,
too.
They're discrete, but he kind of, in all the books, he goes between them.
Uh-huh.
Because even in the book on religion, he has a chapter about about soothsayers and omens and mm-hmm. how they figured into things. And then mm-hmm. farther on, he has it's all sort of woven throughout. Mm-hmm. I was going to say,
in so much of literature, you know, dreams and omens. Look at Shakespeare, and just look at, you know, that we still, literature is not just the rational at all. It's.
Oh yeah, he even talks about Shakespeare, and Shakespeare's had a low opinion of dreams.
Yeah.
From most of the plays, and how. It wasn't a benign thing when people had dreams in Shakespeare plays. So
yeah.
and he tells Port, about
portents of disaster to
yeah,
come.
Yeah, exactly. That's
okay. Well, how are we doing on time?
We have 5 minutes.
We have five minutes, so read some more. Yeah.
Okay. How about if you want to read about this is. This is from the dream chapter.
Okay.
Which is, I'll go here. It's jargon rather than science is the foundation of the social sciences. Psychology, which came to the fore in scientific garb as an attempt at completing medical sciences, is also one of the social sciences. The Germans were spiritless enough to call them sciences of the spirit. They were an unplanned result of the speculations of Claude Henri, Count of Saint-Simon, and the systematic vagaries of Auguste Comte. Society, according to Saint-Simon, obeys laws just as nature does. As a consequence, a search for the laws ruling society should produce results comparable to those obtained by natural or physical sciences. The social sciences have proved an adventure in literary style. They were and are limited to an undignified imitation of the style of the physical sciences. Dreams of a good social scientist should express in a formula what paragraphs cannot. The more complex the formula, the more appealing and successful the social sciences. Social scientists were counterpoised with humanists, as in bullfighting, aficionado rondanos are opposed to escuela cordobés. As a social scientist, I've never forgotten my pride when one of my adult students called me a humanist and included me with Pico della Mirandola, Angelo Di Cembrio, and Guillaume Bouderader, and then with professors of rural sociology. A New Yorker article tells of two social scientists who meet at an experiment and communicate via rapidly scribbled messages of mysterious content. In short, they behaved like two children playing scientist.
But he was a social scientist.
Yes, he was. And he did not. He hated quantitative methods in social sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed that they were the sort of tool of fascism more than anything, and the ways for, you know, people to be controlled. And that's where he was coming from about that.
So how did he approach it? Like what?
Well, more from, I guess you'd call it the qualitative rather than the quantitative school.
Okay.
So rather than surveys and statistics,
uh-huh.
you know, observation and description and things like that.
Makes it much more interesting, too.
Yeah, it is.
Than a lot of abstract. No, yeah, because, right, it gets so abstract if it's just quantitative. It becomes meaningless in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that's always probably the struggle with a lot of social scientists, this whole thing of wanting to seem more scientific and sort of losing the main picture. Before we say goodbye, I want to give us some ways to get in touch with you again, with the website or the...
Oh, sure. For the newspaper, it's ChathamCountyLine.org.
ChathamCountyLine.org.
And for the book... it's takecareofthenight.com. And the website is up, and there's more information about the book and a little some biographical information about both my father and me and some of the story of how the book came about. And and more about it. Other things my father did too, so you get an idea. I mean, he's really special, very very talented person and a terrific scholar, and it's.
Well, his son's not doing too badly, do you think? This is Julian Serrano. We're talking about his father, Renzo Serrano, and Julian's been a newspaper person.
For a long time.
For a long time.
Really since the, and my first byline article was in 1979, so, for quite a while.
And took a folding newspaper in Chatham County that was with the 08, was it, no, when, 2000? Before the big, big slump in newspapers.
Yeah, and we go and plug it right along.
And took that newspaper and has made it a viable, ongoing part of the community, which is wonderful. And so...
you've been listening to Wake Up Call?
Yes, we have.
Please join us again next Wednesday at 5. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Julian. That was fantastic.
Well, thank you. You guys are so nice to
Lori Hoyt saying goodbye.
And also let me promote my book once I was here.
Well, that's great. That's great. That's great.
RJ.